it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, we are talking about another Nets loss tonight to the New York Knicks, 121-102. How are we doing?
The Nets suck.
That's a great way to summarize it. Tonight's game was pretty pitiful. The second half against Utah, pretty pitiful. We're going to jump to that and plenty more. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. But, Jack, where to start?
Cam Johnson had a bounce back game. I don't know where to start. You tell me. Like, I really, honestly don't know where to start with this game. Like, we could spend maybe 3 minutes discussing the game overall and about 25, 30, 35, 40 discussing the issues with the team overall. I don't know where to start, man. You tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, Jack, what was the most disappointing aspect of tonight's game in your eyes?
Like the apathy, like the just disengagement. It just felt like that the Nets just were hoping for things to happen. Oh, let's try and hit a three. Let's maybe play a little bit of transition defense. It's just like, the Knicks are a good team, man. Like, this is a notorious top four seed the last couple of years. Julius Randle's found his form. Jalen Brunson didn't even have the most amazing game tonight. They were out two of their rotation bigs, their key rotation bigs. You expect Nick Claxton, Darren Sharp to make a bit more of an impact. The Nets offense was pitiful beyond belief. The Nets defense was even worse. And there was just nothing changing within the game. There were no in-game adjustments from the players or the coaching staff. It was just wanting for things to happen rather than actually making things happen. It was it was rough to watch, man. We've done this podcast for a long time, and I think I personally probably get recency bias given that we do game by game a lot of the time. But this is one of the worst games I can remember probably this season. And there's been a lot over the last four games, this 0-4 stretch, that stick out as being pretty bloody awful. But this one sticks out in a spectacular fashion and not for good reasons.
Yeah, I think for multiple reasons it sticks out. Obviously, like you said, the effort, the engagement, just a lot of dumb basketball plays in this game from numerous parties. I mean, just one play sticks out. In the second half of this game, Clax frustrated, Julius Randle rebounded his own free throw miss, and you see the replay, and Mikal Bridges and Cam Thomas are just standing there, watching the play happen. And it's just that kind of is a great summary for everyone on this team, because there's different moments tonight where guys are just flat-footed, just standing there waiting for something to happen. And it's just not going to work against a good team like the Knicks. You're going to have to go and beat them. And they play with a level of physicality and toughness, and the Nets at no point in this game matched. And really, the only reason it was close for some parts of the first three quarters of this game is because the Nets had that super hot stretch from three in the second quarter. Without that, this is a blowout from the second on.
That's it. And I think that's almost a symptom of the Nets' poor offensive struggles, is that they rely on the three ball so heavily because they don't have great offensive talent. So they rely on shooting the ball well from three, driving kicks, all that sort of stuff. And a lot of the time that can work, but you sort of look at one of the best teams in the league, the Boston Celtics, and that's what they derive into when they are playing poor offense. And the Nets have shot the ball probably above themselves. And I think that's the reason why the numbers look better for them offensively. And it's just not a recipe for winning basketball. And look, they took 47 of them tonight. They hit 15 of them. They hit two more than the Knicks, and the Knicks shot 13 of 33. They shot nearly 40%, and they're not an amazing three-point shooting team by any stretch of the imagination. Now, again, it might be reductive to just boil it down to one stat, but because of the lack of dynamism and creativity on the offensive end for the Nets and the talent in general, it's essentially Cam Thomas bail us out, Spencer Dinwiddie bail us out occasionally, Mikal Bridges try and hit a shot, but he's hit 10 of them in the past three games. I don't know, man. The offense is rip your hair out, bleed your eyeballs bad.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I think also, you know, we've talked about it. We did a stats episode a couple weeks ago, and we talked about like the Nets 3-point percentage and how high it was, and they were, you know, in the tops of the league. And that was probably more of an outlier, and it was going to come down. So the drop isn't super surprising. And like you mentioned, they don't necessarily have a go-to way to get buckets. You know, Cam Thomas in this game was solid. You know, it felt like he wasn't probably involved enough. This is a game where you probably try to chuck him the ball and tell him, you know, take 25 shots and see what you can do, especially when other guys don't have it. You know, you mentioned Mikal Bridges, 4 of 21 in this one. Spencer Dinwiddie, 3 of 11. Just not much. Royce O'Neal, 2 of 11. Just guys are not producing, and there's just not enough offensive pop. And I put out a tweet during the game, and it kind of talked about how, like, the Nets offensive system doesn't really exist, and it's really just a lot of guys taking turns, you know, ISOing, running pick and roll, coming off dribble handoffs and trying to create for themselves or for others. And none of them are really elite at it. You know, a lot of guys are good. You know, Cam Thomas probably with the highest ceiling, but he's still a young player that needs to develop. And, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie's a good player, but not a great player. Mikal is great sometimes, but, you know, he's come down to earth a lot the last couple games. So it's just like there's no real go-to stuff to find open and easy buckets in this one. In this game and this offense in general, and it's just going to continue to be a struggle until they make those adjustments to find, you know, a way to generate easy baskets without having to hit tough shots or guys to have to do it all on their own on a single possession.
Am I wrong in saying, Nick, no, this might be misremembering and having some disdain for Jacques Vaughn that I probably shouldn't have, but we heard that there was going to be some more offensive dynamism, creativity flow in the preseason. Am I wrong in saying that?
We heard that our friend Justin Thomas posted that on Twitter as well. You know, talked about how, like, there was supposed to be less ISOs, and now we're kind of just getting back to it. And even, you know, Mikal Bridges in this game, I think it stuck out, especially in that third quarter, maybe it was early fourth, where he was obviously having a terrible shooting game. He's coming off a terrible shooting game, and he's just trying to ISO and create for himself and almost kind of force feed it, where it's like, go to some sets, go to some plays and try to create easy offense without, you know, trying to do it all on your own. Guys are trying to kind of shoulder the load rather than play team basketball.
Feels like the only offensive sets that Jacques Vaughn has up his sleeve are ATOs. Like, that's all he has. Like, it's just like, look, at least Steve Nash had F all. Kenny Atkinson at least ran some plays for Joe Harris. Like, there's just, it feels like a coach or the offensive coordinator, whoever it might be, has a level of responsibility for that. And obviously it's on the players to hit the shots at the end of the day. They're the ones that are getting paid the big bucks to do so. But it's the coach's job to find them in different openings and allow them to be the best versions of themselves by running, you know, some creative sort of stuff, some, you know, double drags with Spain, whatever it might be.
They just need a lot more cutting towards the rim. You know, it's a, like you mentioned, it's a lot of driving kicks, and it's like they do generate assists, but it's still relying on someone to beat the defender, run off a pick and roll, and kind of running the same stuff over and over and generating 3-point looks. And obviously, you know, Nets are very analytic, but at the same time, you know, it feels like at times there's openings in the middle of the floor, or there's not enough pressure at times to like force the defense to be locked in on you. You know, it's just like, okay, he's standing in the corner, he's probably not going to move. And if he does move, he's just moving up to the wing. Like, that's easy for a defender to have an idea. This is, you know, the 10 to 10 feet I need to cover, rather than, okay, this guy's going to make a backdoor cut, and I have to keep that in the back of my mind, so I might not be able to help as much. And it feels like the Nets are very predictable. So guys, especially this Knicks team, the way they play defense, they're very connected. You know, it always felt like there was multiple guys available on every drive to have an impact on the offensive player.
Yeah, it seems like very stagnant and simplistic in the way that the Nets do their offense. It's just like simple sort of actions, driving kick, as you alluded to. There's not like a semblance of the ball fizzing around, the players fizzing around, no sort of, in a positive way, yep, chaos, creativity, those sort of things. And our players don't have that outside of probably Cam Thomas and, as you alluded to a lesser extent, Spencer Dinwiddie and Mikal Bridges, but they should be able to.
And Lonnie Walker, who's out, which I think you kind of see his absence a lot right now, and his ability to kind of get downhill and create rim pressure, even against some of these huge centers. You know, I think some of the Nets have really struggled against these real bigs down there, you know, Walker Kessler, Hartenstein tonight. Like, they're not necessarily super mobile, but they're very tall. But Lonnie Walker's ability to kind of hang in the air and kind of glide past them allowed him opportunities to score, where some of these other Nets just don't have that in their bag.
Man, like, I tweeted out the the Wolverine sort of meme, the missing on the frame, and didn't expect that one to get the love that it did. But I was just thinking, I'm like, this was yesterday before this game. Like, this was me thinking, man, the Nets struggling a bit offensively. Man, I'd love to have me some Lonnie Walker out there. And again, we're relying on a guy that we signed on a vet minimum, but his talent.
Who's having a really good season, though, and a really efficient season.
Incredible season. Like, he deserves to have a much higher workload. And I think the absence of him and Dennis Smith Jr., and let's not mention Ben Simmons because it just doesn't make any sense to do so, but having the absence of a team that is reliant on its depth as a collective, it means that the burden of responsibility defensively and offensively means that Spence has to do more defensively, it means that Cam Thomas has to do more defensively, it means that Mikhail has to do more defensively and offensively. And it's just like, those guys can't handle that extra burden because they're not primary sort of guys. Cam Thomas is probably the closest thing to that and is working his way into becoming that.
And but he's when you adjust to the workload, because it's not something he's done over the last season. I think it's also different when you have to work hard for your buckets. It's not like some of these, like if you're Kevin Durant, you can just get a post up and shoot over somebody sometimes, and that's just easy money, where other guys on the Nets, they really have to work hard to get their shots off.
Yeah, and that just leaves you with less energy on the other end. And it's why there's so many lapses, transition, second chance, fast break, points for the opposition. It just makes the Nets look pitiful on that end when they just shouldn't be. They just really shouldn't be. And look, we got the update, and he spoke to Megan Triplett at during one of the breaks, which as well, he's missed the last 8 games. He expected to progress to 5-on-5 over the next several days with the goal of returning to the lineup next week. That'll be a nice little Christmas present for all of us. And Dennis Smith Jr., who is going to be questionable for the next game against Denver. Like, just having these guys back, you know, the way that this roster is constructed right now, when you're a team based on the collective, you have to have the collective available, just sort of vying for stuff and putting the competition, keeping those vibes going and keeping the accountability across the board. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. has been spoken about as like a vocal leader behind the scenes. You know, it's easy to be a vocal leader when you're out there producing and not on the sidelines. And Lonnie Walker, I think, provides an intangible energy that the Nets need, like that athletic pop and juice that you sort of alluded to. So yeah, it's a sad-ish state of affairs that we're talking about. Man, we need Lonnie Walker and Dennis Smith Jr., two guys we signed on the vet minimum in the offseason, but it's the way that the Nets are when our 2, 3, 4 of our 5 best players aren't producing to their capabilities. That's where we're at right now as in terms of the state of the Nets.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple as that. I mean, at the end of the day, obviously this team is not going to win a championship, and there's a lack of talent, and it's kind of like a transition year and trying to figure out what's going on and who you can count on and what to make of each player. And, you know, as much as this loss stinks, it kind of gives you an idea of, you know, some of these guys and where they kind of stand and how much of a workload they can handle and how, you know, dependable they can be over the course of a season or a stretch of games where you need them to really step up. So I think there's a underlying issues that have kind of been there all year, and some of the statistical outliers have allowed the Nets to overlook them and, you know, get to a point where they were above 500, now under 500, and you're starting to see, you know, some of those shortcomings more apparent, especially like you mentioned, without the depth, where you have a guy like Lonnie Walker who's coming off the bench, knocking down a couple threes, giving you 20 points here and there off the bench, Dennis Smith Jr. making impact plays and also playing with like a high energy and effort and, you know, being a defensive disruptor. So it's just like those different things and those lack of chess pieces for Jock Vaughn make it that much harder. And I think, you know, when you have less available, you're expected to kind of do more. And sometimes guys can't do that. And that goes for coaching and players.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What needs to change, Nick? Because as you alluded to, the Nets, you know, they were on an awesome streak. You know, when they won their six of their seven during that little mini stretch, they were in the talk of the town. Everyone was loving them. The vibes were great. Everyone was jumping around. The Nets beat the Suns. It's all good times. But now they dropped the fourth straight game and five out of six. And as you alluded to, 13 and 14 after being 12 and 9. What are the solutions? Are there any? Does Donovan Mitchell fix things? Does firing Jacques Vaughn? What are the solutions? Are there rash ones? Are there small ones? Are there too many to talk about on a 20, 30 minute podcast?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably too many to talk about, but I think the most simplistic thing is just fixing the defense. You know, this is a team that's supposed to be very talented defensively, has had guys who've been in, you know, candidacy for winning defensive player of the year, and you would never know that. This is a team that's bottom 10 in the league in defensive rating, and it just feels like it's way too easy. And I put out another tweet during the game. It's like, think there's a question about the drop coverage. Is that best for this team? You know, last year, you know, with switching, they weren't great rebounding, but defensively, in terms of defensive rating, they were doing a good job out there. So it's kind of finding the balance between the two. And I think if there's still more of a group rebounding and just more of an effort on the end of the floor and boxing out and guys not staring at the basketball while it's on the rim, you could probably go back to switching and still see the rebounding numbers take a tick up. You know, they're never going to be top 10 in the league when you're playing a switching style defense because of the mismatches. But at the same time, if you're getting stops and really disrupting them and they're missing a lot of shots, that makes a difference. Right now, we're seeing teams hit a lot of shots, get comfortable, and then get hot at different points of the game. You know, going back, even when you look at that Utah game, there was plenty of open shots. And I just think of like bad teams beating the Nets. The Hornets matchup where they lost to the Hornet team, it was a lot of just the defense, and that team got hot and comfortable. And then it came to the fourth quarter where the Nets wanted to tighten up. It didn't matter because they already were hot and comfortable. So it's like not being a good defensive team with this unit is really holding the projection and the overall impact and the identity of this team back, because we really don't know a lot of things, because that's supposed to be like the bread and butter. The offense was supposed to be hard.
Yeah. And I think that Iron Eagle reiterated this. We talked about this on our stats episode a couple of weeks ago, whenever it was, talking about the lack of forcing turnovers.
Yeah.
And I think their last is what Iron Eagle mentioned on the broadcast today. That's damning. Like, you can be a good average rebounding team. It's just like, what sacrifices are you willing to make? You're not going to be perfect everywhere. There is no 2016, 17, 95, 96 Chicago Bulls team here. Like, the Nets are sacrificing things for the wrong reasons, it feels like. And the drop by nature is a conservative style of defense. And in that, you're allowing teams who are like every single NBA player that isn't like a big man, like, and even these days it's like, unless you're like not Bismack Biyombo, every guy can hit a mid-ranger. So like, you're giving up this like easier openings here and there. Now the Nets don't have Brook Lopez. Like, Nick Claxton isn't Brook Lopez in terms of in the drop style of defense. When Nick Claxton was all defense, and when he's defensive player of the year, he was playing alongside Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and it was a switching styles game. And that's just like, are you taking away his strengths? Now, we can have a Nick Claxton discussion, and Clax City might be turning into Clax Suburb after what he's been doing lately. But I think defensively, yeah, there are many, many, many issues. Like, Mikal Bridges has been like bad. Awful. He's been really bad.
Even Tenzo just like cooked him on a play today, just like straight to the rim, easy layup. And it's just like, dude, if you're not stopping him, and like, he's a solid NBA player, but like, you're supposed to be top of the line defensive wing, and you're getting cooked by, you know, a mediocre to solid guard. Like, what are we doing here?
Who is playing well for on defense, like, Nick? Like, who is, like, honestly, like, Cam Thomas, I think, is like growing there, but he's still not playing good because
he's just like, doesn't have a Cam misses on all the small details of defense, you know, like
transition, all those different things. Yeah.
Yeah. His on ball stuff, like, you see the effort, there's still issues there, but you see the effort, but it's the team defense, the rotations. And you saw that one play today where, you know, he was playing point for a little bit, his responsibilities to get back. Julius Randle gets a wide open layup. Like, those are the small things that he has to correct, but he's a young guy. Like, he's out of all the guys we're talking about today, you know, he's getting the biggest cushion for excuses because he's the youngest and he's producing still offensively. And he also has played the least amount of NBA minutes. The other starters and all the other vets in this rotation, like, you guys are experienced guys. You've essentially been a team for the last, you know, I guess 40 games, because the end of last year and then 25 this year. So like, there's more of a blame to go on you than Cam Thomas. We know he's not good defensively. He has to grow in that area, and he has slowly. But again, that's still, he's not the biggest issue. That's a known thing. He's not a good defender.
Yeah, and I think if we go back to the coach, and this isn't me just solely blaming Jacques Vaughn, but we alluded to the schemes that the Nets play. But it's also like, okay, it just feels like that there needs to be changes made, and in terms of versatility. Like, the best defensive teams in the league are the ones that have greater versatility. They're good at point of attack. The Nets are awful at point of attack. They're good in transition. The Nets are awful in transition. They're good at first forcing turnovers. The Nets are awful at forcing turnovers. Like, when you have guys that have been proven and made all defensive teams, and DFS is, I think, maybe the best defender on the team right now in terms of what we're seeing in terms of impact and consistency. But even then, I don't think he's been that great this season either. Like, the Nets should have, like, Mikal Bridges and Nick Claxton should be all defensive players, like, yeah, at the very least. But neither of them are impacting highly enough on the other end of the floor that it's just like your burden isn't that high offensive. Enough. Mikal has Cam Thomas to sort of play off a little bit. Clax is like, it feels like impact isn't being made. It feels like they're just not making things happen. And it's almost frustrating to sort of see. And I think Nick Claxton, the frustrations, as you alluded to, boiled out for him a little bit. He was sort of having a little bit of a go at Cam Thomas. And I think in the moment we say things and we might not mean them or whatever, but it's funny. The following like two or three plays, Cam Thomas like hits a three. He finds Clax for a lob. And it's just like, come on, man. Like, I feel like you're venting your frustrations in the wrong position. Now, if Clax, maybe it is now time for the Nick Claxton discussion, Nick, the Clax City, Clax Suburb, Clax Village, whatever discussion we want to have about Clax City's lack of forcefulness and impact that we've seen probably all of this season.
Yeah, I just want to mention just a few more things about the overall stuff. I think offensively, too, it's important to point out is like the Nets don't do a good job of like targeting the other team's weakness. You know, you look at the Nets like, and when they put out there, they'll put out like Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharp. That other team is going to put those two in a pick and roll, and they're going to exploit them and force the defense to collapse and get an open shot. Like, the amount of times where Jalen Brunson was just kind of just chilling on the floor, like, attack him. He's a small guy. You have multiple guys, and we talked about it. You know, the offense is not amazing, but there's at least enough good players where they should be able to attack a Jalen Brunson in a one-on-one situation, force the Knicks a double team, create an advantage, and then find an open driver, an open shot. That barely happened tonight.
I think that's barely happened this season.
Yeah.
I feel like
the Nets are more focused on running a certain play to get a player the ball rather than trying to target a defensive player. It's like, we'd rather attack a really good two defenders than attack a bad defender because we want to get Mikal Bridges a touch.
Yeah, it feels like the process is just all wrong. Like, in the past, and look, you say like, oh, you save some things up your sleeves for the playoffs, whatever. Like, no, like, this isn't the old versions of the Nets where like you save a few things against the Bucks or whatever with KD and Kyrie or whatever. But like, the best players and the best teams are like, okay, send that pick to me like right now, and I'm gonna cook him. Like, LeBron will do that, KD will do that. Just like, come on, bring that guy up for me so I can cook his ass. It just hasn't happened this year, and like, it feels like to me, when Mikal was cooking, again, we're jumping around a little bit, but I think this is probably a broader discussion about the Nets that needs to be had, and is somewhat of a therapy for Nick and I as well. When Mikal was on that stretch, he was playing angry. He had a bit of an attitude to him, and it feels like, we heard post game in the Utah Jazz game, like, his despondent nature and also the accountability.
It's like feeling sorry for himself.
A little bit. And look, I get it. Like, you're allowed to feel how you want to feel. This isn't me being a psychologist in any sort of respect, but if we've sort of seen like the Nets need like Clax to be a bit more impactful, like get in guys' faces, like when he hit that, that three on Kevin Durant, he's like, that's for you, man. That's for you. That's for you. So it's like, we haven't had those moments. And when we have, the Nets have played well. Like, that's when Mikhail's been playing well. That's when Clax has been playing well.
There's a level of confidence and swagger, and that matters in basketball.
They need to be mean. They need to play with a bit more attitude, and that's something that you can't quantify.
And I think that could jump into another conversation. We'll still get to Clax, but I think that could get into the conversation of changing the starting lineup. You know, we talk about toughness, confidence, like a physicality. Dorian Finney-Smith, he's probably not playing enough minutes for what the Nets need. And I think getting him back in that starting lineup is going to be important. And it also gives Clax like a true partner in the front court. Like, he can block a shot. He can get a rebound. He can battle with a big. Cam Johnson can't really do that. Cam Johnson's more of a small forward than a power forward. And Dorian Finney-Smith is an actual, he's probably not even a true power forward, but he has the level of grit that can give you that in the starting lineup.
The thing, I'm like, you've clearly been listening to a few of my solo pods now. But in
I think so.
in saying that, I'm not optimistic that it's going to happen, like, especially after tonight. And Cam Johnson had a good game. Like, he was good, but I don't think Jacques Vaughn has the guts to make, like, the hard decisions. Like, I just don't. I think
there was a rumor on Nets Twitter, you know, make of it what you will. I think it was from Jay from BK and some other people putting it out there that Sean Marks was giving it to Jacques Vaughn and asking him to take Cam Johnson out of the game. So if there's a level of dismay from management, then it should be easier to make that decision.
It should be, but some and other people have sort of pointed out to that, does that undermine Jacques Vaughn a little bit? I'm like, yeah, probably does. Like,
I mean, that typically is what happens in the NBA. I think a lot of people think coaches have this full control. Unless you're a guy that's making a ton of money or you're like a big name coach, the front office is chirping in your ear on a regular basis.
Yeah, and as they should be. Like,
yeah.
Look, we've given both Sean Marks and Jacques Vaughn plenty of criticism throughout the years and throughout however long they've been here. But Cam Johnson shouldn't be starting. Like, tonight's game, like, was really positive to see. Like, he had that level of forcefulness. He was, you know, letting the three ball really fly, and I could sort of tell from that first sort of shot that he was going to play well. But in terms of the overall makeup, as you've alluded to, Nick, I just think he just doesn't fit there. Like, and you can sort of see, like, Austin Reeves coming off the bench for the Lakers. I think I made that comparison point in the past. You could probably do that with Cam Johnson. I just think that if you're expecting the same results but better better results with the same process, like, you're kidding yourself. And that's what it feels like Jacques Vaughn is. Like, his culture stuff, his player management in terms of personalities is all great. It's almost like he's Steve Nash, but with a bit more emotional intelligence and emotional nous with a lesser talented team. I just feel like he just needs to be a bit of a dick, man. Like, just go, hey, Cam, sorry, man. Like, you've been playing trash. Like, it just feels like
he talks about these honest conversations and creating a different environment in Brooklyn. Be about it. You know, I think that's what they need to do. I think it's also just trying to find an element of balance. And I think that's one of the issues too, is like Cam Thomas, Spencer Dinwiddie, both not good defenders. And then Mikal and Clax aren't playing great. Cam Johnson playing out of position. You're starting behind defensively already to start the game. So
yeah,
like,
I think
you need to have another plus defender out there at the very least, to at least give yourself a chance. And even then, it might not be work, but at least try it.
Yeah, one of our listeners hit me up on Twitter and sort of asked, would exploring Cam converting to point guard solve problems or create them? Like, what does Spencer Dinwiddie go to the bench? Now, like, I think Spencer Dinwiddie has been pretty consistent this year, but I would advocate for a change. Like,
yeah,
just change something. Change something.
The Nets could use a wing that could play make a little bit, and that's what they're really lacking. They need someone who could go out there and, like, if you're going to send Spencer to the bench, Cam Thomas is not at a point, if you want to be a competitive winning team, where he can run the offense on his own consistently for an entire game. You know, we've seen him, you know, not look great getting blitzed a lot out of pick and roll and him having turnovers in that situation. And that's where you would need a safety valve. And that'd be like a guy like Ben Simmons, who's not healthy right now. And, you know, we're not going to expect him to be healthy or have an impact for this team this year until, you know, we see over the course of a half a season at the very least. So that would be a huge piece right now if they had Ben Simmons. I'm not going to lie. Like, that would work and it would make a lot of sense. They could play Cam Thomas, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Ben Simmons, Nick Claxton. Offensive spacing, not great, but you do check some other boxes. So it's just like, the Nets just don't have that perfect balance of a lineup, and it's like going to take some experimenting from Vaughn to find it.
Yeah, and I don't think that they will find like the perfect sort of mix, Nick. I don't think
the roster's just not there.
That's yeah, exactly. So I think that they just need to be comfortable with being a little bit off with a few things here or there, but they've got to make changes. Those changes just have to happen, and some changes need to happen for Nick Claxton. Nick, like, what are you seeing or not seeing from him that is, it's almost just like something we sort of spoke about in terms of hard to quantify, like hard to sort of like, it's the eye test overlay the analytics, because like he's been averaging like a near double-double, like he's doing well enough with the blocks department, but he's not, and the numbers aren't great. Like, again, when I put out the numbers of him versus Daron Sharpe, I couldn't fit enough characters to sort of say, yes, obviously Darren Sharp's going up against backup bigs, Nick Claxton's going up against the starters, but the numbers don't, like, at a certain point, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. Like, Nick Claxton, when he was on the floor in such large stretches for the Nets, is just like, he's like a one-man sort of defense. He's not that defensive anchor right now, and that's what he should be getting his bread and butter on, especially after his interview with Mark Scotto as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big interview, talked about, you know, wanting a big contract and all those things, but I think his overall play, he's lacking that energy, enthusiasm. I think at times offensively, he's feeling not involved and asked to do a lot of dirty work and not getting touches on times where he feels like he's, you know, open lobs. And I think if the offense not successful, you know, you're feeling that a little bit more. I think there's frustrations defensively too. You know, he's being asked to box out a lot and not always get the rebound, and guys aren't coming in. So I think all of these little things are adding up, and he's probably feeling like, hey, this scheme is not best for me. We're not a good defense, and we played a certain way last year, and I was excelling, and I was one of the best defenders in the league. So I think he's unhappy. I think he's unhappy probably with the scheme, maybe his role a little bit, and that could lead to ultimately things in free agency as well for him long-term in the Nets. And I think when you're unhappy, you're just not going to play with the same energy and effort, and not to say that's the right thing to do, or you know, I'm backing Clax or anything like that. I think that's just human nature a little bit sometimes, and ultimately could lead to the end of this relationship between Clax and the Nets. And maybe he's also just not the perfect fit with this alliteration of the Nets and the skill sets that they have. It's not like this group was, you know, all drafted together and was a team that was built in a long-term plan. It was kind of just thrown together. You know, you have parts of a team that was part of a contending team, and then you have new pieces coming from a trade deadline, trading those superstars. It's just like, it doesn't all necessarily make sense as a roster in pieces. They don't all kind of gel together.
Yeah, I will also say that I'm over the four-minute substitutions from Jacques Vaughn.
Like, I think that would probably aggravated Clax. Like, that would aggravate me if I established myself as a good player in the NBA, and now you're treating me kind of like a rookie or like one of the bad bigs we've seen start for championship teams.
Like, I just don't get it. Like, look, again, this isn't me like advocating for Nick Claxton playing 35 minutes plus, because he shouldn't be, but like the 4 minute stints, like, makes, don't, like, he took Cam J out and as well, like, it's just stupid substitution patterns. Like, it's just, it's dumb. Like,
it
you're
makes
not...
more sense if Ben Simmons was here, because you want to stagger their minutes a lot or something like that, but that's not an issue now because Ben's not healthy.
Yeah, and De'Ron Sharp's out there getting like 3 fouls in 2 minutes. Like, again, people are sort of saying, well, has Darren Sharp proved himself to be a starter? No, he hasn't, because like, that guy would foul out if he played 24 minutes plus. Like, he makes Jaren Jackson Jr. look like, I don't know, Tyrese Halliburton, and someone who just doesn't get any fouls at all. Like,
and
it's just...
I have yet to really see De'Ron Sharp play a good game against another big center. So like, he doesn't really have good games against good teams with big centers. Like, it just doesn't really happen. I'm not completely sold. I know Sharp has had a good season. He's done some really nice things, but there's still like some of these same mistakes, and some of the fouls are just so dumb to the point where you could never count on a player like that to be a starter, because he might, like you said, foul out in 10 minutes.
Yeah, and he nearly did tonight. like literally, like, Jacques Vaughn put him back out there to close like the second quarter, and he had four fouls. Like, I'm just like,
after he
my
got
guy,
the second,
like,
foul, he just commits dumb fouls too. It's like unnecessary things, like the one he had on Dante DiVincenzo. It's just like, what's the point?
Yeah, look, it's, there's a lot of issues within the Nets right now, Nick. Are there any other things you want to bring up in general before we wrap this one up? We could probably speak and speak for hours, but we'll probably just round and round around and go back to the same sort of issues. But hey, at least we pay cheaper tickets. Nets fans pay cheaper tickets than the Knicks. I don't know. Like, is that something?
I think the hardest thing right now is trying to analyze this team is that there's clearly coaching deficiencies, but there's also players not playing well. You know, guys are playing poorly. They're playing bad. Mikal Bridges is playing really, really bad.
Guess his shooting percentages over the past three games. Guess what he's shooting from the field. I did the math on it. Just guess. Guess the range, and I'll give you a prize. Last three games.
20 to 25%.
Oh, you are so close. 26%. He's shot 14 of 54 from the field in his last three games. Now, that's not good. That's not good at all.
I mean, just look at tonight. Like, let's just say he hits two threes. You know, that's 6 points. And then he hits.
And he had some open ones as well. Like,
he had a lot of open, wide open ones, more open ones than he's probably seen in the last like week and a half. And he couldn't knock any of them down. And then even a lot of the middies he was missing, it's like they were contested, but contested once he hits. Like, give us 10 more points in this game. Then all of a sudden you're getting closer. A couple guys knock down a few more threes, and now it's, you know, in contention. You're probably playing harder down the stretch and have a chance to at least steal a game. And right, you know, that's what we expected from this team, and that's what we got the first couple months of the season. They were in every single game, and they always had a chance. Now they've lost some of that pop.
Yeah, the inconsistencies across the board. When your quote-unquote best player is shooting that way, like we've said in the past, like you go as far as your best players will take you. And Cam Thomas might have usurped Mikal Bridges, but yeah, Cam Thomas can't drag a team when your second best player, your 2A, is shooting just over 25% for the field. Like, yeah, there's lots of issues, man. There's so many.
A lot of guys
are
playing bad. That's just it.
Yeah, and the podcast right there. The Nets are playing bad. They have bad coaches. The team kind of sucks. Hopefully they can beat one of the best teams in the NBA on Friday.
It would actually be hilarious if they did.
I don't have much hope. Who knows?
But, you know, they do have a day off. Maybe they can get their feet back under them, see what happens. It wouldn't surprise me. But, Jack, always a pleasure jumping on here with you, talking about this bad team right now. Hopefully it'll turn to a good team again. And big thanks, everybody, for listening, and also giving a shout out to the Nets fans that were at the game tonight, because that was a rough one.